jury's like, oh, snap, a twist. Like, they love twists. Any great trial has a twist.
I suggest that we give him 10 years in Leavenworth or 11 years in Twelveworth.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take 5 and 10 in Woolworth.
Like this, Mr. Court.
Address the judge as your honor.
Well, it was like this, my honor.
Your honor, not my honor.
Why? Don't you like him?
You're meant to come down here and defend me against these characters, and the only one I've got on my side is the blood-sucking lawyer.
Welcome to Opening Arguments, the podcast that pairs an inquisitive interviewer with a real-life lawyer. This podcast is sponsored by the law offices of P. Andrew Torres, LLC, for entertainment purposes, is not intended as legal advice, and does not form an attorney-client relationship. Don't take legal advice from a podcast.
Hello, and welcome to Opening Arguments. This is episode 316. I'm Thomas. That over there is Andrew. How are you doing, Andrew?
I am doing fantastic, Thomas. I would ask you how you're doing, but I suspect that I know, but I do still care.
Yeah, just doing an Office Space style smashing of my audio interface that caused an hour and a half delay or whatever it was for at least an hour. But other than that, doing great.
PC doing great. Load letter.
PC load letter. It was pretty much PC load letter. Like, it was pretty much exactly that. Oh, man. All right. Anyway. Okay. We have too much, so I quit. Too much to do, too much to say. Wow, what a weird news week, and it's a lot of stuff that I think is just developing. We got some sort of whistleblower happening that we're not going to have the details on yet, because nobody does yet, I don't think. We've got a lot to talk about. We got some Andrew was wrong. Predictably, I'm sure we were both wrong on something about Brexit, but, you know, we'll see. And then we have Yodel Mountain today. We have a lot of Yodel Mountain. This is like
yes, we do.
Flashback to 2017 Yodel Mountain. You're all gonna be having a weird 2017 hairdo and the fashion, everything we did back then. You're gonna be transported back because we have so much. We have like 5 things. All right, but before that, we have to say the live show in LA, October 12th. I'm still just as excited about it. We are just about halfway sold on tickets. So go get your tickets. The links are in the show notes. I have to say it is going to be so much fun. We talked about the Platinum Andrew Cooks for you. That's halfway sold. So there's still some slots there. Get in on it because I cannot wait. Andrew is going to make us dinner, a multi-course meal. And we're going to have copious beverages, of course. And tailored to everybody's needs. And it's going to be a lot of fun.
Tailored to my needs.
Yeah. It's going to be a private hang. I cannot wait for that. I'm really looking forward to it. And also VIP is equally fun. And by the way, the Platinum folks, you get the VIP experience as well. That's going to be a hangout after the show. That was a lot of fun in New York as well. Food, beverage, and chatting and hanging out. Really, really cool stuff. And if that's not your speed, still about 30 tickets left for general admission, which, hey, come see the show. Hang out with us. Got any hard sell, Andrew? Where you at?
I'm with you on the hard sell. It's going to be a lot of fun. I am really, really excited. I have planned out the menu for Platinum Night and we're going to all hang together in a super sweet location. I am really, really excited. So,
you know,
yeah,
why.
I'm going to stop because I think that by the time this airs, we'll probably be oversold, and I don't want to make people feel bad that they can't go, but you should still try.
Well, I maybe I should announce our special guest. What do you think?
Sure, go right ahead.
Let's do it. Let's announce our breaking news. There's going to be a special appearance on the LA show. And this is, of course, assuming nothing crazy happens, because sometimes scheduling stuff can happen. But as of now, we have a special guest for a nice, it'll be a fun segment we have planned. Carrie Poppy of Oh No, Ross and Carrie, going to join us on stage for the LA show. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about, well, I don't want to give away the segment because I think I can make a nice little game out of it. And it'll also be, it'll be a fun game, and it will be, we can sneak in, as we always try to do in opening arguments, sneak in some law and some explainer in there too, along with the fun and games. So I'm super excited. Carrie says she's, 100% going to be there. Unless something comes up.
Me too.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's all of us, though. So as sure as we are that we're going to be there. No, she's going to be there. She's, of course, located in L.A., so it'll be easy for her. So that's a lot of fun. I am so excited that she's going to do that. And so go buy your tickets. Come see us in L.A. It's going to be a ton of fun. Okay, on with the show. Let's get to our first segment.
I'm asking you if you know the difference between right and wrong.
I discovered at a very early age that if I talk long enough, I could make anything right or wrong. So either I'm God or truth is relative. And in either case, booyah.
Oh, interesting. It's just the average person has a much harder time saying booyah to moral relativism.
Okay, Andrew, what were you wrong about? Foolish as you are.
No, here's the thing. That's an AWR on the... on the whiteboard, we were, as far as I can tell...
You can't do that to a dyslexic
person. ...right on everything we said about Brexit, which I'm as shocked as you are to
Are you trying to tell
honest.
Me that the word wrong we doesn't a lot of comments. Start with a letter R?
The one thing that we elided over a little bit was that there is pending a process that is... In 2018, the European Court of Justice ruled that any member state of the European Union could unilaterally revoke Article 50. Article 50 is what allows a member state to withdraw from Brexit. So it is possible for the UK government to revoke its use of Article 50 and cancel Brexit. How that interacts with the fact that there was a referendum in 2016, I still don't know. We're going to, as we said, next week, probably a week from Tuesday, we're going to have on a British solicitor to talk all things Brexit with us and kind of wind us through the details. Hopefully we'll have the Supreme Court ruling by then and we can kind of put all of this together. The betting and prediction markets have that option, the revocation of Article 50, as about a 20% option. So I think if you're looking for a thing for me to be wrong about, and you know we know our listeners are, I potentially analogized canceling Brexit as sort of akin to the Jill Stein recounts or the efforts to get faithless electors to defect from Donald Trump in December of 2016 ranging from impossible to a long shot. The prediction markets have it at about 20%. So still not likely, but seemingly a much more sane prediction than maybe I characterized it. So there you go. But as far as I can tell, we did a good job on Brexit, which I feel like we ought to just hang it up now.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. I think maybe the tiny last letter of the AWR versus AWW. Let's go ahead and bold that or something in the future. Because along with my, pessimism that I assumed we would be really wrong about Brexit, that combined to make it so I didn't see that. Yeah. Okay. Andrew was right. Good job.
I Victory. Shared your pessimism. This is that I am kind of reluctant to wade into waters that are outside my expertise, and this is about as far outside my expertise as I've ever gone. But maybe I'll be slightly less scared about swimming with sharks.
People did try to say, it's not really like it's two different circuit courts when you talked about, the Scottish court and the English court. They're like, Scotland's actually applying Scottish law and the other one's applying English law. And I don't know, for my money, to my ear, that kind of still seems like a good comparison to the circuit courts because they can apply the circuits in the U.S. can apply the law differently, right?
Yeah.
It's just that they inform each other.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And in fact, that was, maybe I didn't make it clear enough in our initial segment, but that was precisely what I was going for, right? So for example, pending resolution in the Supreme Court, the law in the Second and Seventh Circuits is that Title VII's prohibition on discrimination on the basis of sex covers discrimination on the basis of gender identity. That's not the law in the Fifth and Eleventh Circuits, right? So right. That I think that is more of a dead-on analogy than a distinction. So so I stand
there
by.
You go.
I will point out we had a British a Canadian law student named Lyndon. I don't know if we have permission to use his last name. So shout out to you, Lyndon, who notes that in terms of criminal matters in Scotland, the High Court of Judiciary is the supreme body. You cannot then appeal from the High Court of Judiciary, which is apparently connected to the Court of Session. You can't appeal criminal matters to the UK Supreme Court. So, there is nuance there, but, you know, as always on opening argument, right, we could go down rabbit trails and talk about nuance. I don't think we got anything wrong, so I'm pretty happy.
Actually, yeah. Cool. Well, go us. Good job. all right. What else were you right, which apparently starts with an R, and wrong, you're trying to tell me it starts with some other letter. I don't know how that would work. What else were you right about on some sort of episode?
So in our last episode, when we were talking about the Purdue Pharma bankruptcy, I predicted that various states would soon be suing the Sacklers in their individual capacity, and that has happened. First out of the gate is North Carolina. The North Carolina Attorney General has sued the Sacklers in their individual capacity. That is incredibly fascinating, and we have an all-North Carolina show for you next week, so we're going to cover that story on Tuesday, but I thought I would let folks know. Purdue Pharma has now officially filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. We will talk about that on Tuesday.
All right. Well, I'm getting a little sore from patting ourselves on the back, but I think it was worth it. So good job. And I think it's time for some extended yodeling.
Ooh.
Because people have got to know whether or not their president's a crook.
Nobody, so you're not aware of any context during the course of the election?
How many times do I have to answer this question?
Can you just say
Russia
yes or no
is
on
a
it?
Ruse? Yeah, I know you have to get up and ask a question so important. Russia is a ruse.
Well, I'm not a crook.
Okay, here we are. The crisp Yodel Mountain air. What are we talking about? There's so much.
Yeah.
There might be so much. What's our first item of business here?
So, first item up for bids on Yodel Mountain is the ongoing lawsuit. This is In Re Application of the House Committee on the Judiciary. It is case 19-00048. It is before our favorite judge on the United States District Court for the District of Columbia, which is Judge Beryl Howell. And it is the petition of the Judiciary Committee to unseal the grand jury testimony that was redacted in the Mueller report. That is to release to the judiciary those underlying transcripts and the unredacted material, which again comprises about 10% of the Mueller report, largely in volume one. This is a really, really interesting argument that is being made here. And so I thought it was worth kind of breaking it down. One of the things that folks heard again and again in April, and yeah, it's slightly disheartening that we first had the Mueller report break at the end of March, and we discussed this in April, had to do with Rule 6E material. And Rule 6E comes from Rule 6, subsection E of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. And what that rule says is that testimony before a grand jury is confidential. That's Rule 6 as a general rule. And then subsection E provides for statutory exceptions to that rule. And this is the grounds on which the Judiciary Committee has applied for release of those materials. Rule 6E then contains a bunch of different subsections to the subsection under which a party can petition the court to release grand jury material. And the particular subsection that applies here is subsection 3, subsection capital E. And what that says is the court may authorize disclosure of confidential grand jury materials, quote, preliminarily to or in connection with a judicial proceeding. And that's where we run smack dab into the Trump administration arguing that these grand jury investigation transcripts and the material redacted from the Mueller report and the underlying transcripts should not be released. And they really have two arguments. Their arguments are of varying merit. The first is that an impeachment inquiry is not a judicial proceeding. So as part of the application, the House Committee on the Judiciary says, look, yeah, we've begun an impeachment inquiry. We are trying to figure out whether to impeach the president or not. In order to figure that out, we've got to look at the underlying grand jury materials. They've been redacted. They haven't been turned over to us. We need that. That's one of the purposes of Rule 6E. Trump's argument in response is kind of convoluted, and it touches on a case that we've covered in the past, a case called McKeever versus Barr. And that case first came to our attention in opening arguments episode 206. It obviously had a different caption. It was McKeever versus Sessions back then. Bill Barr was not yet attorney general. And it involved, there was a Politico article that was, is this one weird trick going to unravel the Mueller investigation? And we said, no, it's not. And we debunked that on episode 206 while the case was still pending. Ultimately, the case got resolved by the D.C. Circuit. So that case, I don't know if you remember our discussion on that case. That involved the historian who was writing about a trial of a former FBI agent from 1957, and he filed a request to release the grand jury. And so he filed this request to release the grand jury information so that he could write his book, right? And that case had to do with non-statutory exceptions, right? What he was saying was, look, I get it. This isn't necessary to prosecute anybody or anything else, but like, it'd be really, really useful if the public could get this information. I'm a, you know, bona fide historian, and I'd like, you know, and this is from 1957, right? You know, who the hell cares? Let's get out the information and let me, you know, sort of report on it. And we told you at the time, lots of crazy things were going around because it involved grand jury. And like the Politico article was, will this stop the Mueller report from being transmitted to Congress? And we're like, no, it's not going to do any of that. But as it turns out, so we were totally right on that. Let's keep patting ourselves on the back. But as it turns out, the case really does have an implication on the ongoing matters to uncover all of the grand jury testimony that's been redacted and excluded. This is a little bit complicated, so let me try and unpack it out. And remember, all of this goes to the argument that impeachment is not a judicial proceeding. Okay? So McKeever versus Barr went to the D.C. Circuit and McKeever lost. This was a 2-1 decision. The two judges in the majority, Doug Ginsburg, wrote the opinion, were conservative judges. And then and the judge dissenting was Sri Srinivasan, a moderate who was rumored to be on Obama's shortlist for the Supreme Court before he picked Merrick Garland. And so of that 3-judge panel, the 2-judge majority said, no, the courts do not have an inherent exception to release grand jury materials because they think it'd be a good idea. Right. And I don't want to be mischaracterizing this. It's a perfectly reasonable argument. Like the argument McKeever was making was a perfectly reasonable argument. In fact, I'm about to make a similar one in federal court in one of my existing cases. Right. And that argument is this. There's a statute here. Right. A rule, but essentially, like there is a codified rule of Rule 6E that says here are the grounds for releasing grand jury materials, right? And McKeever's argument was okay, sure, but the court also has inherent power to release grand jury materials even if I don't meet the requirements of the particular rule. And the analogy that I would make there is something that is actually very, very well established. It has to do with sanctions. I've got a case in which the other side has done stuff that we don't like, and it doesn't fit neatly into any of the specific rules that prescribe conduct. But the court can always sanction a party for conduct that is not in the interests of justice, right? So that's what we're going to do. We're going to say, hey, court, use your inherent sanctioning power. And I feel really good about the motion. I think we're going to win.
I do too.
Thanks, Thomas. I appreciate it.
I know nothing about it, but I feel good about this one.
So the argument of, hey, there's inherent power to release grand jury materials isn't a crazy one. Totally straightforward. But the court said, okay, we considered this, we evaluated, we decided we don't have inherent powers to release grand jury material. And that set up Judge Srinivasan in his dissent to say, okay, but if we don't have the inherent power to release grand jury materials, then how do you explain Haldeman versus Sirica, which is a 1974 decision of this court, of the D.C. Circuit, in which we released grand jury information in connection with the Congress's investigation into Richard Nixon, right? Because all these are Nixon
cases. I like
cases.
It. If that's true, then where did I get all this grand jury information?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And so what he was doing was basically setting up kind of a double bind, right? He was like, look, either we do have the inherent power to release grand jury materials. And by the way, Judge Srinivasan did this obviously in light of the Mueller investigation, right? He was 100% aware that when you start opining about grand jury material in 2019, he was obviously aware of the context in which this opinion would be used, right? So he said, look, either we have the inherent power to release grand jury materials in addition to 6E, which is the position that I've taken. I get it. I've lost. But if not, then by implication, impeachment investigations, impeachment inquiries must be part of a judicial process, right? Because we definitely release these materials, right? This court is not saying we are revisiting Haldeman versus Sirica and we screwed that one up and it's bad law. We're saying it is good law, and the majority is saying we don't have any residual inherent powers, so therefore an impeachment inquiry must come under the notion of 6E. It must be preliminary to or in connection with a judicial proceeding. And so that is, in fact, what the majority, the two judges in the majority, decided to do. In footnote 3, they said, our dissenting colleague, along with McKeever, points us to Haldeman versus Sirica, which permitted the disclosure of sealed grand jury materials to an inquiry by the House Judiciary Committee into possible grounds for impeachment of President Nixon. And then it, you know, kind of casts some shade on the opinion a little bit. It's like, well, that case didn't really do a lot of analysis on Rule 6E. And then the footnote says, in any event, we read Haldeman as fitting within the Rule 6 exception for judicial proceedings. Doing so reads the case to cohere rather than conflict with the Supreme Court and the D.C. precedents that have been discussed previously in our opinion, which both predate and postdate that Haldeman 1974 decision. So put all that together. That is, really, really strong evidence that the McKeever decision stands for the proposition that impeachment proceedings are a judicial proceeding for purposes of Rule 6e. And that means this whole Trump's first line of argumentation here that you can't disclose grand jury materials because an impeachment hearing isn't a judicial proceeding, that argument is not a good argument. And
that's so weird because I was thinking it was going to be like the opposite of this. I was thinking, oh, you wouldn't want it to be a judicial procedure because then there would be fewer rules about it. But so it's actually the opposite. You want it to be one so that therefore they can release.
For purposes of 6E, you do. And in fact, our law students and budding young lawyers who listen to the show, check out pages 19 to 22 of Trump's brief in this case. I'm obviously going to link the brief in the show notes. It is an illustration of sort of what lawyers have to do when you're sort of staring squarely in the face at a 2019 case that holds the opposite of the proposition that you want to argue. It's not bad lawyering for, you know, what you have to do in terms of trying to distinguish the case. I don't think it's likely to fall on very receptive ears, particularly not at the district court level, because, right, Judge Beryl Howell does not want to be overruled by the D.C. Circuit. And so I find it highly unlikely that she is going to accept this, you know, sort of incredibly tenuous connection to try and distinguish the McKeever case. But that's not the only argument Trump has. And his second argument is a better argument. Again, it still kind of runs smack into McKeever and Haldeman versus Sirica. But let me know what you think of this argument.
All right.
It is.
I'll be the judge of this.
There you go. I want you to be.
Move over, Beryl.
Move over, Bacon. Now there's something meatier. all right. Trump is saying, even if it is, we're not there yet. Okay. The Supreme Court has made it clear, right? Because remember, the 6E, 3E exception is material that is preliminary to a judicial proceeding. So, all right, our first argument was impeachment isn't a judicial proceeding. You don't buy that. We're not preliminary to a judicial proceeding because preliminary, as the Supreme Court has made clear, does not apply to any stage prior to a potential judicial proceeding, because then that would be no restriction at all. I mean, obviously, anything could be, you know, preliminary to a judicial proceeding if you read it that way, right? Like, I punch you.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's preliminary to a, right? Because you could sue me for assault. Then, right? So the Supreme Court has said it must be, quote, related fairly directly to identifiable litigation. That's a 1983 case called U.S. versus Bagot. And that case involved a tax audit. And in it, the Supreme Court said, look, an audit is not the same as a judicial proceeding, right? An audit is an administrative proceeding. That is the IRS meeting with you to review tax irregularities. Can lead to judicial proceedings, right? Could lead to both civil and criminal process against you as a result of the audit. But the audit itself is just an audit. You might go to the audit and the numbers work out just fine. And nothing happens. And so the Supreme Court said, that's not enough, right? We're not preliminary to a judicial proceeding. We do not have to release grand jury material in connection with an audit. We'll release it if he gets, you know, if the taxpayer is formally charged, but we're not going to release it at the audit stage. And that's Trump's argument with respect to impeachment. And here he's taken a page out of the playbook of everybody that sued the president over the past 3 years. It's not a bad idea. He's quoted at length the kind of mealy-mouthed statements that have come out of the both sides of the mouth of, right? Of, so even Jerry Nadler, for example, has said an impeachment inquiry is when you consider only impeachment.
Whether or not.
Yeah, that's not what we're doing. Again, I'm quoting Nadler. That's not what we're doing. We're investigating all of this, and we will see what remedies we could recommend, including articles of impeachment, but not limited to that. Right? And in the pleadings, Trump says, look, the additional remedies include censure, legislative proposals, constitutional amendments, and a congressional referral to the Department of Justice for prosecution or civil enforcement. Then they, you know, quote from Pelosi, same thing.
So it's almost like it would be beneficial for us to actually go forward with this impeachment stuff.
Yeah, it kind of would be, wouldn't it? And it's almost like being honest and upfront and saying, yes, we are Democrats. We care about the rule of law. This is very, very important to us. And absolutely, we are looking at impeaching the president if the facts fit that. And that's why we went to see the grand jury material. That would have made a much better case here.
All right. Well, we solved it. Okay, Nadler, Pelosi, do it.
Yep. So here's what's next. There was a sealed order in this case issued yesterday. I can't read it.
Well, I can help you with that. I know how to read.
No, it's not that I've, I have not suffered a brain aneurysm.
I know basic reading was going to be an asset on that. Okay, I can do it. I'll field this one.
No, I mean, it shows up on the docket. And then when I click on it, it says you are not authorized to view this material. I don't.
Patreon goal. Get me authorized.
That set additional, as I can see from the docket entries, right, that it also set an additional hearing date, but I don't know when that is either. So at some point in the identifiable future, Justice Howell has been, Judge Howell has been aggressive and, you know, has been deeply connected to the Mueller investigation and all the ancillary proceedings. So I assume that this will move quickly, but I can't read anything on the docket. So that was entered. So so we will continue to monitor. This is yet another fun thing I do every week is I page through the dockets on some of our favorite cases. And this is now on our hot list and we will see what happens.
Docket watch.
Oh man, that'd be great. Could we like slide across a Ferrari, like jump in the windows? Yeah.
Or we just have some Thomas overproduced like CNN, you know what they do for the elections. Yeah. Dun, dun, jacka, dun, jah, docket watch.
There you go.
$1 million worth of CGI for no reason. Because we make so much money if we're CNN on selling Trump controversy. So we have nothing but money to burn on graphics. Sorry, I didn't turn this into a rant on the news media making money off of Trump. Never mind.
Good point, though.
Okay, and now it's time to talk about emoluments. Everyone's favorite weird word that I can't get enough of. What's going on? Update us.
This is a this is big news. We are going to tease this out in a lengthy segment all its own. But I do want to kind of give everyone the top line. We talked about how the Fourth Circuit and the District Court for the District of Columbia have rejected the various emoluments lawsuits against Donald Trump, those that were brought either in an official capacity by state entities, the one brought by Maryland and the District of Columbia, and those brought by private party plaintiffs, right? And the private plaintiffs lawsuits are people who own other hotels and restaurants who are like, dude, this is supposed to be a capitalist economy, and you've got the president of the United States going, boy, sure would be nice if, you know, foreign dignitaries stated things that have my name on it.
The Second Circuit. Seems unfair, to say the
least. It does seem unfair. Yeah. The Second Circuit has just reversed a Southern District of New York decision and allowed that granted summary judgment in favor of Donald Trump and against the private emoluments plaintiffs and has permitted those plaintiffs to go forward on a theory that they have standing, that they have suffered cognizable injuries under the emoluments clause due to the activities of the president. It's really, really interesting. And this is a rare opportunity for me to sort of delve into a legal argument that Donald Trump is making that is not preposterously stupid and corrupt. So we're going to talk about it.
He's not making it. Somebody right, who actually right. reads.
Yes. But that someone is making on his behalf that gotcha. Is nevertheless passes the straight face test, mm-hmm. Which, again, low bar, but one that Donald Trump and his lawyers managed to slink under pretty much all the time. So we're going to give this a lengthier segment, but the top line headlines that you have read are correct. This is a very, very lengthy Second Circuit opinion that distinguishes the Fourth Circuit's opinion, says that the private plaintiffs do in fact have standing, articulates a different reason for it. We will break down all the law on that. I've seen a couple of places that say this seems like it's taking a shot at the Fourth Circuit. I definitely don't read it that way. I just read it as a split among the circuits, right? The Second Circuit thinks that individual private plaintiffs do have the right to go forward against the president on an emoluments clause theory. This is headed to the Supreme Court. So we'll break all that down for you, but that is a continuing development on emoluments.
Ooh, okay. You've got a lot of bullet points to get through. You think you can do it? We're running out of time. Are we lightning rounding?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling lightning on this.
All right. My instant first vision was, do you know what happens to a toad when it gets hit by lightning from X-Men 1 back in 2000, whatever?
Why does everybody think that's such a terrible line?
Oh, like, it's pretty bad.
Same thing that happens to
channel
everyone else.
Your inner Storm and
Holly
tell
Berry?
Us.
Oh, love Holly Berry.
Oh, yeah, actually. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, please do. my co-host Halle Berry is going to talk about a new lawsuit regarding apportionment.
Yeah, this I'd like to say. I hope that this was inspired by our segment.
100%.
But this is absolutely the kind of thing that we talked about in our "Everything is awful and will be terrible forever" episode, which is an organization, La Unión del Pueblo Entero, which is LUPE or Lupe, that is a labor organization formed by Cesar Chavez. Huh. They have challenged the Trump executive orders requiring the Commerce Department to distribute citizenship data to and collect citizenship data from other branches of government, right? Like we talked about how that data collection could potentially be used by a President Trump to apportion the legislative districts in a way that uses the census data while not replicating the census data. And so this is a fantastic lawsuit. It is really, really, again, it was just filed, so we'll see, what the motion to dismiss looks like. But I can tell you from reading the complaint, it's really well drafted. There are five causes of action. The four are violations of the Administrative Procedure Act, and one is an equal protection claim. It was filed in the U.S. District Court for the District of Maryland before a good friend of mine, Judge Paul Exinis, somebody who is unbelievably intelligent.
Is there a single judge that's just like, Judge Steve Johnson? What? Every name is like, wow, what a comic book name or something. Daryl Howell. What was his name?
Paula Exinis. It's Xinis.
Exinis. Okay.
Paula. It's like Paula. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. It's like Mr. She and Mix-a-Plick.
Yeah. She and I were in the same class, summer associate class at Covington and Burling way, way back in the day. So she is the current president of the Federal Bar Association, somebody that I know and deeply respect. And I can't, there may not be anyone in the state of Maryland whom I would rather have this case. She's somebody that is going to be thoughtful and thorough, and I am very, very excited about that. the lawsuit was just filed, which is why I thought Nimoy was inspired by our show, right? Like, the executive order was months ago, but this lawsuit was just filed, and we'll continue to monitor it.
Well, why didn't we file it? We should just start filing these things. No, that's okay.
We should. We need to start we need to start a civic advocacy group and Patreon resurrect goal. Cesar Chavez and, you know, all have right. him lead it.
Patron goal for sure. Okay. Are we ready for bullet number four?
We are.
All right. What's happening with what does he pronounce it Lewandowski or Lewandowski? Is that what it is?
I think it's Lewandowski. I always say Lewandowski, but
I hear it two different ways. I don't know why, but okay. It's just like thesaurus. It's practically the same.
Yeah. So Corey Thesaurus, yeah. The thesaurus.
What's up with him?
He's an obstructionist jerk, and he turned his hearing before the House Oversight Committee into a sideshow circus, which everybody should have anticipated that was going to happen. And now, sort of, you know, the question is, you know, is contempt, you know, quote, on the table and that sort of thing. Yes, all of that should be on the table. I want to direct folks to, I'm going to link in the show notes, a piece by Ely Mistal over at Above the Law, somebody we have linked to before, it's got both a glass half empty and a glass half full moment. The glass half full moment is that the non-televised parts of the Lewandowski hearing involved the House Oversight Committee giving half an hour of time to Barry Burke, who just ripped Lewandowski up one side and down the other. It's really, really good. So if you haven't watched the video of that, I highly recommend it. Just type in Burke, B-E-R-K-E, Lewandowski. In fact, I think if you type in Barry Burke, it will be the number one hit, because this is not, you know, this is not a household name. So if you want to be optimistic on Yodel Mountain, the fact that the Democrats are starting to get behind the strategy of let's bring in a lawyer instead of having a bunch of different members of Congress ask 5-minute questions in a stupid way, that's a positive sign. The negative sign is Lewandowski and others have telegraphed what they intend to do before Congress. And as Mistal points out, if you knew this guy was going to show up and be in contempt of Congress, this is not like the president. This is not even like Don McGahn, where, you know, he's former White House counsel. This is just a guy that Donald Trump likes. And you absolutely, seriously, he was never a White House employee. Yeah. There is zero argument that executive privilege covers this guy. I'm trying really hard not to clown horn here.
Yeah.
You absolutely 100% could have had the sergeant at arms walk him off in handcuffs.
Oh,
yeah. No. Off the plank, off the rails, right? Like that you could have arrested him on the spot for using Congress's inherent sanction powers. And they did not. And I'm hoping, I want to spin the glass 100% empty in the most positive way that I can, which is, you know, maybe the backlash to Congressman Nadler over this will encourage Democrats to, you know, sort of be more forceful in terms of holding these witnesses in contempt, because we know the playbook, right? There is no reason now, if you are a Trump loyalist, you should be emboldened. You're watching people openly defy the law. I can't prove that they've been promised behind the scenes that they'll get a pardon. But if you're betting on publicly available information, sure looks like Hope Hicks, Michael Flynn, Don McGahn, these folks are banking on a Trump pardon. And while that's sort of the operative view in the background, that's very clearly where Lewandowski thinks he's heading. So if that's what they're going to do, right, force the issue early.
Make him use the part, make him pardon him for something, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. Right now, you are seeing, and this is the continuing theme, Democrats are just slow to realize that, you know, Trump has bought, you know, has brought a gun to the knife fight. And they're like, well, I'm sure he's going to take out the knife soon enough. No, like it's not going to happen. So, so those are my thoughts on Lewandowski.
What a frustrating world. Okay. Yeah. Fifth and final bullet point for Yodel Mountain. Lots of yodeling. I'm sure the poor yodeler is losing his breath over here. Just
he is indeed
been yodeling the whole time. Taxes. What does this mean? We're getting Trump's taxes.
Trump's tax returns. Ooh. Lots of different fronts right now, including a lawsuit filed this morning that I checked in our break between recording, and it's docketed but still not publicly available, still not downloadable. That is another lawsuit filed in the Southern District of New York by Manhattan DA Cyrus Vance, seeking Trump's tax returns. That sits on top of... and let me take a deep breath so that I can get through all of these. The Mazars case, which is pending before the U.S. District Court, which is pending before the U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. The last filing in that case was on August the 20th. So that ruling is due any day now, which will likely require Mazars, the accounting firm, to turn over Trump's taxes. The IRS case before Trump appointee Trevor McFadden in the District Court for the District of Columbia. In that case, that's going the other direction. Democrats lost the House Oversight Committee, lost a motion to expedite. There was a motion to dismiss by Donald Trump filed on September 6th. And Judge McFadden can sit on that for forever, and likely will. The other DDC case is a lawsuit brought by Donald Trump for declaratory relief challenging the New York state law that was passed in this past legislative session that would require all presidential candidates to release their tax returns. So and that has some interesting procedural stuff, largely because the New York state defendants have moved to dismiss on grounds that it belongs in New York and not in the District of Columbia. Trump probably has better of that argument from a rhetorical standpoint. He's like, look, this is not really a lawsuit between, you know, New York parties. This is a lawsuit between the president of the United States and the real party in interest, which is the House Judiciary Committee, to which the New York parties have promised to immediately turn over Trump's tax returns. So all of those things are all going simultaneously.
We're hitting a critical mass of sternly worded letters is what you're saying. And they all combine to a sternly worded transformer.
Voltron.
Voltron. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Sternly worded Voltron. And that'll really show them. Right?
Lots of irons in the fire. Look, again, disaggregating is a positive thing because Mazars is a multi, you know, is a multi-state, probably even multinational corporation worth billions of dollars. And, you know, they're not like Corey Lewandowski or even Michael Flynn, right? Like Mazars LLC is not taking a bullet for Donald Trump. So, you know, there's all of these different irons that are in the fire are ways at which we can continue to gather information. I'm optimistic about that.
All right. Well, there you have it. Lightning. Let's move on to our final segment, which I think will be more or less a teaser. But yep. What can you tell so far about this whistleblower? This is just hot off the presses today. As of recording, we don't have much, but what do we have?
Yeah. So we do not have the complaint, so we can't analyze it. In terms of speculation, I want to link in the show notes. I've shared out on social media. There are two really, really good threads from friends of the show and people we trust. One from our friends over at Mueller, she wrote. One from our friend Asha Rangappa. Read those. They're better speculation than I can do because those folks are in the business of speculating and kind of putting together breadcrumbs. I'm in the business of reading 300-page leaked documents, which we just don't have. Adam Schiff confirmed that today, that he does not have, nobody has a copy of the actual whistleblower complaint. Here's what we do have, and I'll link these in the show notes as well. We have the September 10th demand letter, which was sent to the acting director of national intelligence, Joseph McGuire. And then we have the September 13th subpoena, because presumably acting director Joseph McGuire said no, requesting information regarding a whistleblower complaint filed by a Trump-appointed inspector general claiming that there were significant and troublesome issues with communications between Donald Trump and a foreign leader. That's all we know for a fact. The salient piece of information there is, you know, again, this is not an independent, you know, Robert Mueller and his 13 angry Democrat, right? Like these are not. So what is salient here is this is a member of the Trump administration, somebody with everything to lose and somebody who very likely does not share much in common with the ideology of this show, filing this complaint. But until we see the complaint, like I can't break it down, and I can't do a better job of speculating than Asha and AJ.
All right. Well, I expect hopefully there will be a longer segment about that at some point, depending on what it turns out to be. Really weird. Interested to find out more information for sure. But that's the time we have. It's time to go to our what we got, First Timer Friday for patron thanks over at patreon.com/law. And there's so many good reasons to join. Hey, we didn't even talk about a lot of awful movies that just came out a couple days ago. That was a tremendous amount of fun. The Lincoln Lawyer with Matthew McConaughey. It was as fun as it sounds. It really was.
Yeah.
So go check that out. Pledge a buck or whatever and go listen to all the bonus stuff and get your patron shout out. And that's what we'll do right now. Andrew, why don't you thank our first timers on this fine Friday?
I will. I want to be very clear because I like being clear. Lot Awful Movies is a $2 patron perk. I don't want somebody to feel like they're giving under false pretenses. We will take your money at any level, but $2 you get Lot Awful Movies, and we talk about our varying opinions of Matthew McConaughey and The Lincoln Lawyer. That was a lot of fun. All right, thank you too. Is Thomas's Second Chance Law Firm LLP hiring summer associates? Good question. Well, summer's about over, and September's a long, you know. Eric Webster, Sarah, hashtag no more Mr. Mitzelplick, and then something a string of unpronounceable characters. There's a Der Erfnigger, which I think was trying to get us on our own hoist
we can't,
on our own Mr. Mitzelplick petard.
Hoist on our own Mitzelplick, yeah.
Jennifer Davies, Gabriel Blair, Sterling Wells, Healy Blade. Oh, that sounds awesome. That definitely sounds like a Transformer.
Hellablade?
And yeah. Oh, is it Hellblade? I'm sorry, no, I was reading
Heli,
it as Healy.
Like helicopter. Do you say helicopter?
I said
you said Healy Blade, so I'm saying it's Hellablade.
Hellablade. Yeah, Hellablade definitely sounds like an evil Decepticon with, you know,
check out that helicopter, guys.
All right, Mr. Thesaurus.
Yeah,
and
you're right. You win. And now it's a tie.
Dylan Barnett. Take it away, Thomas.
All right. Thanks to AJ Hernandez, Trevor C. We're going to the live show. Surprise. I love JC. Whoa, that's awesome.
Woo!
Oh, can't wait to see you. Evan Schwartz, Kenny Hoshin, Evan William Alexander Fuchsia Stevenson Alfred Sebastian. Okay. Burke Chops in Debate 2016 on Freenode. What? I don't know what any of that is. Bosnick Fangirl. Oh, I know what that is. I'm a Bosnick Fangirl too. New segment idea, Real Property Deep Dive. Oh, geez. Yeah. We want to maintain some number of our listeners, though, so I'm going to reject that deep dive topic, but who knows? All right. Thank you so much, patrons, and we are going to hop on with next week's guest for T3BE. Here we go.
Oh, no associate of this firm has ever failed the bar exam.
Talk to the hand. I need your clothes. That's one of my mission parameters. Trust me. I know now why you cry.
All right, it is time for T3BE, but we are joined by a special guest, Representative Christy Clark from North Carolina. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We are great. We are excited to have you for a little bar exam question today. And then, of course, we've got a nice interview, a nice long interview with you on Tuesday's show that we are really looking forward to, because there's an awful lot of news out of your fine state lately. And we're going to break all that down on Tuesday's show. But in the meantime, sorry, now we're frenemies because we're going head to head on the bar exam.
All right.
Ready to play?
Sure.
All right. Here's the question. And for the sanctity of the game, the way in which it works is we always let Thomas answer first. Yep. And that way he can't piggyback on your expertise here. We have Thomas and Representative Clark. We have a criminal law and procedure question.
My specialty.
So at least it's not real property. Here we go. Four men are being tried for conspiracy to commit a series of bank robberies. Nine successful bank robberies took place during the period of the charged conspiracy. Because the robbers wore masks and gloves and stole the bank's surveillance tapes, no witnesses have been able to directly identify the robbers. Some circumstantial evidence ties each of the men to the overall conspiracy. During cross-examination, a prosecution witness testified that one of the men was in jail on other charges during the last six robberies. That man's lawyer moved for a judgment of acquittal at the close of the government's case. Should the motion be granted? A. No, because a conspirator is not required to agree to all of the objectives of the conspiracy. B. No, because a conspirator need not be present at the commission of each crime conspired upon. C. Yes, provided that the man has complied with the rule requiring pretrial notice of alibi. Or D. Yes, regardless of compliance with the alibi rule, because the government is bound by exculpatory evidence elicited during its case in
chief. That really took a left turn there. Yeah. I was going one way with it. Okay. Well, I mean, I remember from things we've talked about that this conspiracy stuff can be pretty, I don't know what the word is, but you can get people on conspiracy for just, if you're the driver, then you're liable for everything that happens in the bank and that kind of thing. So it sounds like there are nine bank robberies. One of the people charged with the conspiracy was circumstantial evidence ties them, but they were in jail for six of the robberies. So they're being tried for the whole conspiracy. Gosh, I don't know how that works. What if you had one guy who was just kind of a free agent for like half of them, you know, would you charge them with everything? The man's lawyer moved for a judgment of acquittal. Okay, so A, no. I'll go through the answers again here, see what jumps out at me. No, because the conspirator is not required to agree to all objectives of the conspiracy. I didn't like that one as much because the wording is kind of weird. If I was going with a no answer, I think I'd go with B. No, B, I liked it better. No, because a conspirator need not be present at the commission of each crime conspired upon. That's a strong one I'm leaning toward for me. But then this bar exam, they take a total U-turn here, or whatever. I guess a 90-degree angle turn, because the yes answers are like under a totally different logic. So C, yes, provided that the man has complied with the rule requiring pretrial notice of alibi. I don't know what. I have no idea. And D, yes, regardless of compliance with the alibi rule, because the government is bound by exculpatory evidence elicited during its case in chief. So that's kind of a weird, it's weird for the bar exam to do this. It feels like there's like two totally different things going on in these answers. I think this is going to be one of those ones for me where I could not tell you the difference between the yes answers, really. Like I don't, they seem too weird to me. So I'm kind of just going to lean toward B, because I at least can grasp the logic of that answer. Might not be right, but it's the one I feel most comfortable taking a stab at. So I'm going to guess B. I eliminate A. It doesn't quite seem right to me. But B, because you don't have to be there each of the time. So if the conspiracy is bank robberies and This guy did three of them. I feel like that you could still be charged there. I don't know how that works exactly, but it seems to make sense. So I'm going with B, no, because a conspirator need not be present at the commission of each crime conspired upon. And not to mention, who knows, maybe somehow like helping him plan behind bars, you know, I don't know, maybe possibly. And I can't really, if I were to pick a yes answer to guess on, I guess it would be, I don't know. I don't like either of them, actually. Maybe I would say it's between each of the no answers. So that'll be if I'm eliminating two, I eliminate the yes answers boldly. All right, that's my thought process. I'm going with B. All right, lay it on me. What do you think? How'd I do?
Oh, sorry. You know, I was kind of going down the same pathway that you're going and kind of leaning towards B as well. And my rules of civil procedure, I'm pretty foggy on those.
Me too.
So I didn't know what to do with that one. I think you're right. I think the yes ones are off the table. It's either A or B, and I too am leaning towards B.
Okay. All right. That's smart.
All right.
Smart game theory. You're not gonna I feel like you're not gonna be embarrassed either way. Like either we both got it right or we both got it wrong.
Right.
That's always a good choice. Well, thanks so much for playing the game with us, and tune in everybody on Tuesday's episode to hear the answer and also a fantastic interview with Representative Christy Clark about all the nonsense that is going on with Republicans in North Carolina.
And if you want to play along with Thomas and Representative Clark, you know how to do that. Just share out this episode on social media, include the hashtag T3BE, include your answer and your reasons, therefore, and we will pick a winner and shower that person with never-ending fame and fortune. Fame and fortune not guaranteed.
All right, that's our show. Oh, wow. What a rapid response Friday, Andrew. You got a lot. You squeezed a lot in there like no one else can. So great job. So much to keep an eye on. And we will see you on Tuesday for a really good interview with North Carolina Representative Christy Clark. You're going to want to hear it. It's really interesting to hear a first person perspective of not just the Republicans being horrible, like we covered, but more stuff, you know, just being a lawmaker, having run for office in the wave of 2018, all kinds of cool stuff. Tune in Tuesday. We'll see you then.
You betray the law! Law!
This has been Opening Arguments with Andrew and Thomas. If you love the show and want to support future episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/law. If you can't support us financially, it'd be a big help if you could leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever podcast delivery vehicle you use. And be sure to tell all your friends about us. For questions, suggestions, and complaints, email us at openarguments@gmail.com. The show notes and links are on our website at www.openargs.com. Be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @openargs. Until next time. This podcast is a production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC. All rights reserved.
Opening Arguments is a copyrighted production of Opening Arguments Media, LLC, all rights reserved. Opening Arguments is produced with the assistance of our editor, Brian Ziegenhagen, our transcriptionist, Heather Loveridge, production assistant, Ashley Smith, and with the generous assistance of our volunteer unofficial researcher, Deborah Smith. Special thanks to Teresa Gomez, who runs our merch and our live shows and also heads up the OA Wiki project. Follow them at OA Wiki. And a big thank you to our Facebook group moderators, Emily Waters, Alicia Cook, Eric Brewer, Natalie Newell, Brian, and Teresa. Check out the Opening Arguments community on Facebook. And finally, thanks to Thomas Smith for creating the fabulous OA theme song, which is used with permission.